From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple with the local news. The president of Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization called for unity as proposed federal funding cuts could drastically impact the future of the tribe. Yesterday, more than 120 delegates of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska met for the first day of its 90th annual tribal assembly in Juneau. Its president, Shalyeesh Richard Peterson, told delegates during his State of the Tribe address to remember the values and strengths of their ancestors and fight for the tribe's future.
Today we face new challenges, political division, environmental threats, and the continued impacts of colonial systems. But our power is in our connections to each other, to our land, to our ancestors, and to the generations still coming.
Peterson expressed concern to tribal leaders during an executive council meeting earlier this week about proposed federal cuts that he said have the potential to slash a third of the tribe's funding from the government. During his speech to delegates, he specifically referenced a traditional food distribution program that was ended by the Trump administration. He said the cut is a setback in a much longer fight.
Federal policies took our lands, restricted our harvests, and undermined our food sovereignty. This program was helping us rebuild that connection to our food, to our health, and to who we are.
The tribe also works closely with federal agencies like the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Indian Affairs, which were both hit by the Trump administration's sweeping federal workforce and spending cuts. And this year's assembly is also a constitutional convention, which means the tribe will consider proposed changes to its constitution. Delegates traveled to Juneau from different villages in Southeast Alaska, Washington, and California. The tribal assembly will consider amendments tomorrow morning before adjournment that evening. Governor Mike Dunleavy on Thursday announced he'd vetoed a bill that would have boosted the basic per-student funding amount for public schools, the base student allocation, by $1,000. Instead, Dunleavy said he would introduce a $560 BSA increase attached to a set of policies in a bill that he said he would introduce on Friday. The veto was widely expected. Dunleavy called the bill the House and Senate sent to his desk a joke after senators stripped out a variety of policy provisions that lawmakers previously included in the bill as an effort to seek compromise. Dunleavy's new bill, according to a draft provided to reporters, would provide $35 million in targeted funding in addition to the $560 base student allocation increase, including an increase in funding for homeschool students in correspondence schools and incentive payments to school districts tied to student performance on literary assessments. It would also make a variety of changes to state law around charter schools and require school districts to regulate the use of cell phones in schools. Lawmakers have signaled they're open to working with Dunleavy on a compromise, but it's unclear if any particular items in the bill may present roadblocks as of midday Thursday. It's unclear what the new bill will cost. Status quo funding for schools and other state services, slightly less than the funding Dunleavy proposes, would leave the state budget hundreds of millions of dollars in deficit. 4 fatal landslides in Southeast Alaska over the last decade have sparked a region-wide effort to better understand and prepare for the mounting risk. That was supposed to include a major conference last month, but as Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the gathering was canceled after it became clear that some federal agencies wouldn't be able to attend.
An estimated 80 fire chiefs, city planners, emergency managers, and other officials from across Southeast were set to gather in Sitka back in March for a second annual landslide conference. Their goal, to pull landslide-related knowledge, resources, and strategies over the course of 2 days. Ron Heinz is a senior researcher with the Sitka Sound Science Center, which helped organize the event.
This is the primary venue for dealing with the landslide issue in Southeast Alaska, is this organization, because we bring together, you know, the people that are living in the affected communities in Southeast Alaska.
But that didn't happen. Heinz says the group was informed that representatives from federal agencies working on the issue, such as the National Weather Service and U.S. Geological Survey, would not be able to participate due to new restrictions on travel by federal employees. Heinz says there was an agreement that it didn't make sense to go ahead with the conference without them. Also contributing to the decision, Heinz says, was general uncertainty around how federal agencies would interact with regional landslide efforts moving forward.
It would be very difficult to kind of, you know, make plans and do things in the future without any sort of certainty of what the government landscape was going to look like in the next 12 months or so.
Initially, the hope was to reschedule the conference several months out. But Heinz says lingering uncertainty about federal policy probably means it won't happen this year. Derek Boynset has participated in the regional partnership as a member of the Haines Planning Commission. He says these types of events are crucial to ensure landslide-related research and planning efforts aren't siloed in different communities.
This group is a good way for all of those people and resources to kind of come together and help each other out and share information.
Poinsett adds that Haines has benefited from the effort, including by way of a state-funded landslide risk analysis. He says the borough had that opportunity due to connections made via a region-wide coalition that spearheaded the conference. It's called the Southeast Alaska Landslide Information and Preparedness Partnership. Lisa Bush runs the group. She says the conference is important, but she's also worried about what the federal travel limitations and funding cuts might mean for the region's handling of landslides more broadly.
Landslides don't care who runs the government. Like, we're still going to have to deal with landslides here. It's a very big geohazard, and we have more landslides than any other place in the country.
Bush says federal agencies have played a key role in helping gauge landslide risk in Southeast, including by installing monitoring equipment. That work will likely be affected, she says, if federal employees can't get back to the region. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfeld.
And the future of a federal program that supports rural Alaska schools remains grim. KRBD's Jack Darrell reports that its loss would pile on to state funding uncertainties and could affect your property taxes.
The Federal Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act was in place for over two decades. A couple years ago, the act doled out about $12.6 million to 20 communities in Alaska in the Tongass and Chugach National Forests. It's not a ton of money, but Sina Gubatayo says it makes a difference. Gubatayo is the assistant manager of the Ketchikan Borough. Ketchikan received the biggest portion of Alaska's funds, about $1.4 million in 2023.
Over 96% of the lands inside the borough's boundaries are federal lands, and that's more than any other county or borough government in the nation.
Think of the act like a fix for this old compromise that happened between Congress and citizens who live in or near national forests. The U.S. grabbed up those forests to protect the country's timber resources and made them into national forests. But that mass federalization meant that nearby communities couldn't use the land to fund their schools and local governments.
So we have a lot of lands that are locked up for federal purposes, which means, you know, we can't develop them. We can't build more houses on that land, generate more property taxes.
The original compromise came in 1908, when Congress and the U.S. Forest Service began selling access to timber in national forests, and then gave those communities 25% of the money to make up for it. Over time, though, timber sales declined. And that's when the Secure Rural Schools Act came along, with the goal of helping communities transition away from relying on the timber industry.
Having that source of funding, which is specifically intended for education purposes, it reduces the draw on the local taxpayer. So it's a little bit less than that the local taxpayer doesn't have to pay through their property taxes to support schools.
But earlier this year, Congress failed to hold up its end of the bargain. The longtime reauthorization language for the act didn't make the final draft of a wider stopgap funding bill in the House. Without it, we go back to 1908. Gubatayo says that if you own, say, a $400,000 home in Ketchikan, that loss of Secure Rural Schools funding would translate to about a $200 increase in your property taxes. And sure, Ketchikan will see the biggest dollar impact from losing this funding. But Ketchikan Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum says it won't necessarily be the biggest community impact.
When you go look at a place like Yakutat or Wrangell, some of these smaller communities, they get smaller amounts of money, but proportionally, it's a big, big part of their funding.
According to Bynum, as it stands, Yakutat could see up to a 48% increase in property taxes to cover that gap. Bynum introduced a resolution in the Alaska House in January urging the feds to reinstate the program. Officials from Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, Juneau, and Craig all testified in support.
It's just a message to say that Alaska stands united to demonstrate how important this particular item is
and that we encourage Congress, and we also encourage the President of the United States to not only reinstate secure rural schools for our communities, but also hopefully that we can make it permanent.
The House passed the resolution 35-4. It's in the state Senate now. Bynum says it would be great to not need this funding from the federal government, you know, to have a prospering timber industry.
But at this point, we're not there. We're not at that point where we don't need it.
Even with bipartisan support from the Alaska legislature, though, secure rural schools likely has an uphill battle against the Trump administration. Like, here's Ketchikan Borough Mayor Rodney Dial talking about a conversation he had with Alaska's congressional delegation about the funding. This is during his annual State of the Community address in March.
And with all the cuts that we're seeing in Washington, I've never seen our congressional delegation more pessimistic about not being able to get that funding. I know they're fighting, and I really appreciate what Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan are doing, but it just seems like it's more difficult this year.
Rural communities from across the nation are also calling for the revival of secure rural schools, but U.S. Congress is running out of time. And without reauthorization, local governments and school districts won't see those payments this summer. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
An eruption at Mount Spur, the closest volcano to Alaska's population centers, is now less likely, researchers said today. Last month, the Alaska Volcano Observatory warned Alaskans that observations indicated an eruption at Mount Spur was more likely than not. The volcano sits about 80 miles west of Anchorage and has erupted only twice in recorded history, once in 1953 and again in 1992. More recently, though, researchers are seeing fewer indications that Spur will erupt. Matt Haney, the Volcano Observatory's head scientist, says an eruption is still possible. You're listening to KTOO.